Let's light this candle.
Just keep cranking away.
Take that and think about that for a little
bit. Wow, bro.
You are listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
He can do a lot of things when that football's in his hands. So, and he's got a great scheme right now and a great head coach in Matt LaFleur that's doing a lot of good things. They got a running game going on. He's got they got a lot of things clicking right now on offense. So, but at the same time, you know, we feel good about our defense, and we'll be excited for the challenge. But it'll be a good matchup. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback that you don't see these type of quarterbacks come around too often.
You are listening to Cap and Company live from San Diego, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. We are behind the scenes with the baseball winter meetings on ESPN 1000.
Do you slide on all your nights like this?
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Cap and Company. 9 o'clock in the great city of Chicago, 7 a.m. here at the Grand Hyatt in San Diego with Danny Zetterman. I'm David Kaplan. Chris Bleck is at the controls back at 190 North State in Chicago. And day one is in the books here. And we had one humongous deal go down, but it did not involve Chicago teams. I got a chance to be with Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer yesterday for their media briefing in their suite. And then Rick Hahn met the media outside the pool about a half hour later as they juggle the two media contingents because a bunch of us are covering both teams. And away we went. Rick Hahn is going to join us at 11:25 this morning. And then we'll have Jed Hoyer on the program tomorrow. So looking forward to having both those guys on, but a lot to discuss. Danny, how was your day in San Diego, kid?
It was glorious, Cap. I tell you what, I've never been to the winter meetings before, the baseball winter meetings, and it is really a sight to behold. If you're a fan and you come to the winter meetings, you have access to some of the biggest names in baseball. I didn't realize that because we get to the Hyatt, that's where we're broadcasting from, really early in the morning. We show up here at 5 a.m. We're in an empty conference room, basically broadcasting to ourselves. When the show
empty hallway. Yeah.
When the show ended yesterday and I took the escalator down the stairs into the lobby, I was met by maybe 1,000 people in that lobby just congregating and hanging out.
Yep.
And there's people like you and me that are in the media. Then there are people that are just fans that are hanging out. But then amongst them all are the biggest names in baseball.
Right.
Joe Torre standing in
Tony
a corner. Tony La Russa standing in a corner. There's, you look over, there's Jim Thome. There's Joe Maddon. So you really have access to these guys. If you wanted to come to San Diego or wherever the winter meetings are next year and you bought a ticket, got on a plane, you literally could just hang out in the lobby and hang out with some of the biggest names in the sports. I couldn't believe how accessible these guys were.
Yeah, you can just literally walk up and talk to them.
And what's amazing is you don't need a media credential or a press pass to get where we are to broadcast. So you could literally come, like you guys were doing TV by the pool yesterday, and I went to watch you guys do Sports Talk Live, and Joe Maddon was there. Fans could just come out and sit there and see Joe Maddon walk by, and Tom Verducci walk by, and D-Row was walking by. It was great. It's great access.
Yep, I talked to D-Row, so he's going to join the program. Even
well, we'll
we
see
leave.
About that. He always tells us he'll join the program, and then he never joins the program.
Yeah, he came up today. If you need me, I will do
yeah.
it. I said, okay, don't forget you said that.
Yeah, right.
So Joe Maddon came on the TV show yesterday, and he was doing MLB Network, and our set is right next to MLB Network out by the pool. And there he is. Now, he and I have not spoken since he left. It took the Angels job. And I was fairly hard on him.
I would say more than fairly. I would say you were quite hard.
Okay, so there he is. And Danny Wysocki, who's awesome, our booking producer at NBC Sports Chicago, runs over by the MLB set. Joe's waiting to go on. He goes, hey, Joe. Hey, Danny. Gives her a hug. Joe's great to deal with. And she said, would you come on with us when you get off MLB? He's like, for you, of course. Who am I going out with? She goes, well, Tony Andracki, who you know, who traveled with the team, our Cubs insider. And the host, of course, is Cap. And he looks at her and he goes, okay, he went off the rails at the end of the season, but I'll come over. And he comes over. He walks in while we're already on the air live. He sits down. Hey, Joe, how you doing, man? Great. Congratulations on your new opportunity. Hope it goes well. Thank you. Thank you. I said, so I've got to ask you, Joe, because it's basically the elephant in the room. I've been a harsh critic of some of the things he did. I said, how did you feel being micromanaged by the media, especially a guy like me. And his quote was something along the lines of, and you can find it on social, no problem. I don't let that stuff bother me because you're wrong. Okay, touche.
But that's what makes him great. He didn't let it bother him.
He did.
Rolled right off his back.
And then I went up and did the Theo media session. So we're in his suite, and there's 20 media people in there. You name them. Paul Sullivan, Bruce Levine, Patrick, you, Tony Andrack, you name all of them. Jesse, of course. They're all up there. And they let you come in with your cameras. Theo goes on the record for maybe 15 minutes, and we ask questions, and we'll play some of that audio for you. And then the cameras all leave, and the rest of us get to stay and off the record, just ask questions, and he fills you in. You can use some of the quotes, but he'll say, this one's for background. Like, there was a rumor that the White Sox were after Marcelo Ozuna, and Rick Hahn said, I don't know where that rumor started from. So they'll give you that type of stuff so that you're not on a wild goose chase that they end up having to put the fire out when it mushrooms. So Theo, you know, was really good. And then we went down to the pool, and Rick Hahn waited till the Cubs were done, and then he met with the Chicago media for a good 40 minutes, and you ask him on the record and off the record questions. So that's the protocol. We do that every day, 5 o'clock Cubs, 5:30 White Sox, and so we'll do that again today. So
when you say you go into Theo Epstein's suite, I'm kind of caught up on this. Is it the actual suite he sleeps in, or is it like a special suite they rent for him to host you guys, but you're not like sitting on his bed and using his toilet?
No, he's got an extra large suite that has a conference room in it.
So it is really his suite.
Yeah, but there's an adjoining door to his bedroom.
So you could look through his suitcase and check out his wardrobe for the week.
No.
Borrow some floss.
Peter Chase, Jason Carr, they've got that closed off. You can't even get over there. The door's closed. But there's a huge dining table in there, and then there's another table where they have like a whiteboard set up, and they cover it so you can't see, because they list, like on the board, they'll have everything listed from, they have a two guys that get out here a couple of days early, and it's their job to set up the board, they call it. So
like their war room. It's
correct.
Like for the draft, or
correct.
They're preparing for their moves this
one
week.
One board has every level of the minor leagues and the prospects all listed. Here's all the pitchers. Here, everybody in the whole system. So that if he's on the phone with Billy Bean of the Oakland A's, and Billy says, okay, I'll trade you player X. Here's who I want. Theo can go to his board and see where they've got the rankings done, all of that. A lot of it's computerized now. And then he has another board with all the free agents and another board with contract stuff, but it's all covered. We can't see any of that. That's either put away or there was a whiteboard that had paper over it. So that's the way, you know, teams do it all here, and they have a million different discussions. Like, I have not seen Theo or Jed in the lobby one time, and I was here from 5:15 yesterday morning till I got off the air at 9 o'clock last night. So I was here for, I don't know, what is that, 16, 17 hours? Never. And I went through that lobby a billion times. Never saw any of the Cubs personnel. They were in meetings up there. Didn't see Rick Hahn or any of them. But there's other GMs that are just wandering through, just talking. Joe Madden was holding court in the lobby for a good hour.
Oh, he was there longer than that, because when our show ends at 10 o'clock local time, obviously noon in Chicago. So when I went down to the lobby for the first time at 10 a.m., Joe Madden was there. And I had to bring all this equipment back to our hotel because we have the broadcast equipment. So I brought it back to the hotel, and then I came back here about an hour later, hour and a half later. Joe Madden was still in the same spot in the lobby. Then I went upstairs to see your TV set. I went back down about a half hour later. He hadn't moved. Just the people around him had moved. Mm-hmm. After hearing Rick Hahn speak yesterday and Theo Epstein speak yesterday, I came away with two major points. The first one is, as a Cub fan, the 2016 Cubs are gone,
yep,
and major moves are being made.
Yep.
Theo basically said, listen, we're going to make some difficult decisions. We're going to make some hard moves. Not all the fans are going to like it. And Rick Hahn said something that I wrote down yesterday when he said it that I thought was incredibly interesting. He said, quote, there's no urgency to get anything done here. Which led me to believe, like, you know, we know that they're in on a starting pitching. We know that the Cubs are the Sox are a few pieces away of making an actual run, maybe to the postseason in 2020. But when he said there's no urgency, it made me think maybe there's one more year of this rebuild. Maybe in their minds, 2020 isn't the year. I know Sox fans are excited and hopeful that 2020 is the year. You know, it's like the Cubs' 2015 year. But after hearing Rick Hahn say that, it gave me pause to think maybe the organization doesn't believe that 2020 is the year that they're really going to compete for the postseason.
Yeah, I've been saying all along, if you were, you know, we talked all summer.
If I was listening, yes, I listen.
I always believed that the window opens in 2021, not 2020, for the White Sox, because you're going to go to camp, you're not going to have enough pitching depth. You just can't address that type of pitching depth in one off season. Michael Kopech has not thrown one pitch, I'm talking about competitively, since he had Tommy John surgery. Now, he's cleared. He's back 100%. But he's not going to throw 200 innings. They're not going to do that with a prized stallion like him. So they're going to be very careful. You look at their rotation. Lucas Giolito was a stud. Okay. You've got him. Ivan Nova's gone. Where are all the innings going to be eaten by? Dylan Cease hasn't proved anything. He's got a great arm. Has he proved anything that he's a winning pitcher at the big league level? The answer is no. They're going to sign somebody. They're in on Dallas Keuchel. Okay. Dallas Keuchel's a very good pitcher. He's not the top of the league Garrett Cole. And, you know, I've heard different people, including the afternoon show, say, why don't you go after Garrett Cole? Garrett Cole is going to get north of $300 million for probably 8 or 9 years. For me, that's a stupid deal for whoever does it. But Garrett Cole is legit. The White Sox are never going to play at that end of the pool. They're just not going to do it. So Steven Strasburg was never leaving Washington. So if this fantasy of, well, don't go after Zach Wheeler, go after Strasburg and Cole, you can't get those guys. No matter what Jerry spends, you cannot get those guys. If Garrett Cole does not go to Anaheim, where many have speculated for a long time that he would be headed because he grew up 7 miles from the stadium, went to high school there, and he has now told the Yankees, yeah, we're not adverse to moving to New York. Their initial offer was $245 million. Obviously, that's going to be way light, so they're going to revise it because Steven Strasburg got $245 million for 7 years yesterday. The pitching market is exploding. Now, when we met with Theo Epstein yesterday, I asked him, do you now look at the Darvish deal because Darvish is in a good place? He's healthy. He's confident. He's comfortable. And he said, yeah, we absolutely. It's funny. I said, Theo, do you look at the Darvish deal now and go, wow, we made a really good deal. That was a really good signing. The contract's good. And he goes, repeat your question. And then laughed. He said, I just want to hear you say it again, that we made a good deal because they took so much heat for what they gave you, Darvish. You, Darvish, if they put him on the market, 4 years left at what, $20 million?
He has 4 years at $81 million. I was going to ask you about that because when Theo Epstein said that yesterday, I wrote it down to ask you about it. Here's his quote on you, Darvish. He said, you couldn't get a guy like Darvish on that kind of number now, let alone what's left on his deal. He's a real asset for us. The second he said the word asset, a light went off in my head, and I thought to myself, we're talking about Chris Bryant getting traded. We're talking about Wilson Contreras getting traded. We're talking about Kyle Schwarber getting traded. Is it possible that
Zero.
They trade you, Darvish?
No.
Why not?
Because
he'd get a lot in return. The way he pitched in the second half.
Oh, you'd
the
get fact a ton in return.
4 years, $81 million with what starting pitching's going for, you'd get a ton in return. Why, if they're rebuilding, and from listening to Theo yesterday, he said, you know, we have an eye on winning in the future, which lets us know 2020 isn't going to be a year they're winning a World Series. Why wouldn't you get assets back?
Because I asked him about that, and he said, we're not writing off 20. He said, as we sit here today, we still have Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras, Kyle Schwarber. He goes, we got a veteran rotation. Yes, we need to get our payroll in line. Yes, we need to get younger pitching. But he said, we're not trading you, Darvish. You, Darvish, is a perfect fit for what they want to do. So I guess there's nothing such as an untradeable player. I don't see any scenario where they would move him. Here's Theo Epstein on the trade and free agent market starting to heat up.
It's great to have everyone under the same roof, and it can speed some talks along. And then the trade market a lot of times is tied in a lot of ways to the free agent market, and that's starting to move a little bit. There was a big signing today, and maybe more in the days ahead. So, yeah, activity's picking up a little bit, but we're still not close to anything, and more rumors out there than actual deals moving close.
So that was Theo yesterday when we met with him up in his suite. We'll be up there again. I'll be there today at 5 o'clock and Rick Hahn at 5:30. But Rick will be on this show live right here at our set. In fact, while we were talking to you, Scott Reifert walked right by the media relations director of the White Sox just to make sure he knew where he was taking Rick. So Rick will be here, and then he'll do MLB Network TV after he's on this program. So looking forward to talking to him, and we can ask him your question about 2020 versus 2021 versus he talked yesterday using the same exact language that Theo and Jed talked about years ago. He said, I'm not looking to just push my chips in the middle and try and win this year no matter what the cost is. He said, I want sustained success so that White Sox fans could show up for 5 to 7 years and go, my team has a chance. Now, I will tell you, I would not be shocked if the Cubs entertained moving Jose Quintana. And I'll tell you why. Because he's got 1 year left. He's at very reasonable money for a starting pitcher. In fact, he makes nothing for a pitcher. $10.5 million is nothing in today's market, as we see. Top-end starters are going for $35 or $40 million. Now, again, he's not top-end. He's a four, but he's a great dude. He takes the ball. He throws close to 200 innings. He's perfect in your room. I'm not the hugest fan because of the price the Cubs paid, but if you put him out there, you absolutely would get something back because he's a workhorse. So that wouldn't shock me because you have to look at it this way. If you're not all in it to win it this year by pushing all your chips in, are you signing Quintana to an extension? He's only got 1 year left, and then he walks away. Are you going to give him a qualifying offer which could approach $20 million next year? Probably not. So I think you have to consider all options unless you're going to sign him to an extension, and I don't see that coming. Rick Hahn also talked about the Chicago White Sox. Here's the latest update on what the White Sox are working on.
Productive conversations over the last couple of days. Today was probably a little more focused on conversations with other clubs than free agents, but we remain active and in tune on both fronts. Ultimately, as much, and this is sort of the fan side of me talking more than anything, or the kid who grew up excited by the winter meetings every year. Certainly would love to get stuff done here. We've been known to get stuff done at the winter meetings again. We've also had some quiet winter meetings along the way ourselves. But there is simply no urgency to get anything done here. We'd love to knock off everything on our list while we're all together here. But that's no different than how we were approaching our business last week or the week before, or the week before Thanksgiving. Signed Yasmán. We'll remain engaged in conversations in terms of predicting whether something happens. It's really sort of impossible to say until we get right on that goal line, which we're not at yet, just yet.
There you go. So that's Rick Hahn, his thoughts, and we'll ask him much more specific questions. So if you have a question you would like us to ask Rick Hahn when he's here at 11:25, just shoot a tweet to me at the Capman, and I'll be glad to try and fire through as many questions. And again, he cannot talk about players on other teams. So those are the only provisos. He's not allowed to by major league rules. Other than that, I'll ask anything that you want. Buster Olney, who's wildly connected, said something about Chris Bryant yesterday that we found shocking. You'll hear what Buster said about the Cubs star third baseman when we return. We are live in San Diego, all brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. Behind the scenes of the winter meetings continues. Kappa Company, ESPN 1000.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the seams of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. You're listening to Cap and Company starring David Kaplan on ESPN 1000.
When you look back on your time there, Did you love when you were being micromanaged by guys like me? Or, hey, man, that's part of the deal.
It's part of the deal. I really, listen, I am so self-confident what I do and how I do it. Just because guys like you are wrong, I'm not going to respond to that.
Cap and Company with David Kaplan on ESPN 1000.
All right, that was Joe Maddon on Sports Talk Live yesterday, and we appreciate him for coming on. He very easily, Danny, could have said, no, that guy was, as he said to Danny Weissage, that guy went off the rails on me. I just told the truth, man. You know, there are people out there that go, oh, he's a Cubs fan, so he must be a homer on the Cubs. No, I tell it like it is, man. I try hard, and he was not happy with me, but he came on, and then after I got done with the Rick Hahn media briefing, I'm walking away. We had to do a conference call for TV, and Joe Maddon walks right by, and I'm like, Joe. Turns around, he's like, what's up, man? I said, hey, I just want to thank you for coming on. That was first class. He goes, we're cool, brother. I wish you all the best. Yeah.
When he did his media briefing, there were more Chicago media members around him than from any other place in the world.
Yeah, one of the...
Like, I mean, he's the manager of the Angels. You would think they'd all be L.A., Anaheim reporters. Everybody from Chicago
right.
was gathered around him.
When they did the Strasburg press conference yesterday, I went to it because it was Mike Rizzo and Scott Boras, and they said that there were the talk of the room was after the press thing ended that more questions about the Cubs for Joe Maddon and Chicago than all the California reporters combined on the Angels. Pretty funny.
You were really hard on Joe Maddon, and you and I have gone back.
Not really hard.
You were
fair.
Hard on Joe Maddon, but and you and I have argued about it mm-hmm. during the season. We argued about it when they let him go. We argued about it. Do you now think maybe that you were a little too hard on him?
No.
Well, let me ask you. Let me explain the question. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Jesse Rogers sat across from us, and he said one of the reasons they're going to trade away some of the pieces of this Cubs team mm-hmm. is that after throwing out the same lineup for 2 years, they realize it's just not working. That lineup's just not working. So if the Cubs front office realizes that the players provided to Joe Maddon is not working and they need to trade pieces away, uh-huh. perhaps all the blame you put on Joe Maddon was unjust. Sure, maybe he deserves some of it. Uh-huh. Absolutely. No uh-huh. question about it. And they needed a new voice in the room, as you say. But maybe you were a little too hard on him due to the fact that the players just weren't carrying the weight.
Look, I can only call it as I see it. And whether it's on a post-game show or on radio, I'm going to just tell you what when I see Steve Cishek walking the building and they blow a late lead and you don't make a pitching change, I'm going to say that I think you're wrong. When you make this move instead of that move, I may be wrong. I can only speak from the heart. I never make it personal. He's a class act. I loved working with him. I'll never, ever forget November 2nd, 2016, the greatest night of my sports fandom, and it can never, ever be topped. It's the greatest thing that ever happened in sports for me. But I'm also going to be honest. Just like I said, I think Theo and Jed are in a major slump, and it's unconscionable that in 8 years they've developed zero impact major league pitching. I'm just being... factual. So, I tell the truth, kid.
I know what you're saying. I just think after we realized that the group of players they had on the field wasn't working, perhaps you were a little hard on him. Joe Girardi sat in this exact seat where I'm sitting right now and said to you yesterday, sometimes he has to wear decisions he makes from the media because he knows more than we know.
Correct.
So your example of Steve Cishek blowing a lead, perhaps Joe Maddon knew a reason that he had to leave him in that game that you didn't necessarily
correct.
Know about,
that's
and
correct.
He wore it. That's what makes Joe Maddon a player's manager.
I had a former manager of the Cubs, pre-Lou Piniella, tell me that I was all over him. How could you not bring that guy in? He's perfect. The analytics, everything said, you got to use that guy. And he walked up to me. He's like, okay, you want the truth? You can't use it on the air? I said, okay. So-and-so was out last night till 4 o'clock in the morning, and I find out that he was hammered drunk. We had a game in the afternoon, and you want me to bring him in with the game on the line? You don't know what was going on in our room. I do. He goes, did I tell the media that? No, because I'm not going to throw my player under the bus like that. I'll lose my room. But he goes, you think you know what I should have done, and you don't. So I get it. I completely get it. Buster Olney, who's wildly connected here in Major League Baseball, said something about Chris Bryant that a lot of us in the media looked and went, really? But we've talked about, does Chris Bryant truly have the trade value we all think he does? Yes, he's everybody's favorite player, and he won the MVP, and he won the Rookie of the Year award, and the Cubs won the World Series, and he had all these big hits. This is Buster Olney on Chris Bryant yesterday.
While Chris Bryant is a star player and has been a star player, he doesn't have a lot of trade value because he's getting really expensive. Plus, he has his grievance against the Cubs, which could steer him into free agency potentially next fall. So the most valuable asset that they're dangling out there now is catcher Wilson Contreras. And as our friend Jesse Rogers has reported, it wouldn't shock anybody in baseball if they wind up trading those two guys before we get through the wintertime, which that would be huge news in Chicago.
Okay. In asking around the game, people in the game, I'm not talking about media guys wearing a lot of polyester. I'm talking about guys in the game. I went up to Steve Phillips from MLB Network, who was the GM of the New York Mets. Jim Bowden's going to be on with us later. We'll ask him when he shows up. Chris Bryant's trade value is something that's – there is a segment of Major League Baseball that does not think he has the value that maybe we all expected, because as we were discussing trades, some of these guys said to me, hold on a second, you think you're getting a haul back? You're going to move the money, and you're going to get a haul back of guys that you look and go, boy, I got to make that trade. I got all these great players back. Doesn't work that way. They said, go look and see what Houston gave up for Gerrit Cole. Go see what some of these other guys, when you move the money and there's 2 years of control and there's some question about Chris as a long-term fit at third base, the analytics are not kind to him defensively, do you have to then move him to the outfield? Outfielders are much more plentiful than elite third basemen, and if he's not an elite third baseman as he ages and you've got to move him to left or right, does he have the same value? He's not a 50-homer guy. He's not a 40-homer guy. He's not a 100 RBI guy. So how much value does he truly have? Now, if you want to move the money because you don't believe you can re-sign him, that's a different question. The Cubs do want to get under the luxury tax, and as another GM said to me, if you don't think your team is good enough, barring lightning in a bottle, to win the World Series, don't pay the luxury tax, because if you keep repeating and going over, the penalties become more and more severe. He said it's not just throwing the most money at it. He said it's not the owner going, here's the checkbook, go get it, because they're not signing Gerrit Cole. They're not going to have a $270 million payroll. That's just a fact. That's just the way it is. So you've got to look at your assets and go, what's the best way to maximize them without giving them away?
See, I would think Chris Bryant's a steal. If you're a team that's on the cusp of winning a World Series, you trade for Chris Bryant. Let's assume he's going to lose that grievance, because everybody in this building where we are at the winter meetings thinks he's going
to
lose the
grievance. Yeah, I went up to Steve Phillips. I said, what do you think happens? Steve's one who believes there's more value in Bryant than others. Steve said, if I was still in the game as a GM, yeah, I would love to have Chris Bryant. I absolutely think he's got a lot of value. I said, well, what happens if he's only got 1 year left versus two? And his quote to me was, he goes, to use your words, no shot he wins that grievance. None. He said, because if he wins the grievance, then what the arbitrator has said is, guess what? Players and their agents determine when a player is ready to get to the big leagues, not the individual club. He goes, there's no chance that happens. He goes, you will have guys like Luis Robert's agent for the White Sox saying, we can't send my guy to the minors. He's ready to play. Well, we don't think you're ready. He said, George Springer with the Astros, same scenario. He goes, you're going to all of a sudden decide everyone in the industry who came up a little bit late that was a good player should be made 1 year earlier to free agency? He goes, I don't see any way Chris Bryant wins the grievance.
So Chris Bryant loses the grievance. The team has control of him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Next year he's slated to make $18.5 million. Mm-hmm. The year after it's going to go up, obviously, as he faces arbitration.
Yeah, so they're saying, but speculation is it's about a two-year, $45 million commitment.
Correct. If you're a team that's on the cusp of winning a World Series, mm-hmm. and you could give away some prospects to get a former MVP – at $40 million, you're telling me you wouldn't make that deal? That's why when I listen to Buster say that his trade value isn't high, sure, it's not high for teams like the White Sox that are on the rebuild and trying to build something for long-term success. But if you're on a, you're a team that's on the cusp and you're a piece or two away, Chris Bryant being available I think is a perfect fit.
Maybe. If you believe that he has more in there, if you believe that his shoulder is 100% healthy, there are some people that go, yeah, I just don't see the same impactful swinger at the plate that I saw in 2016 when he was the MVP. That's just what people in the game are saying. 312-332-3776 is our phone number.
As a Cub fan, who would you be more sad about them departing with? Trading away Chris Bryant or trading away Wilson Contreras? As a Cub fan that's hoping for success.
Wow, that's a really good question. Wow, I would probably be more disappointed if Chris Bryant was traded simply because he was the number two overall pick. He was the MVP of the championship team in 2016. He was the rookie of the year. He was the minor league player of the year. He was the college player of the year. And you looked at him and went, okay, that guy should be a Cub for his entire career, period.
Yeah, but you just said there's ambiguity with where he plays, his role on the in the defensive formation.
I would make an outfielder out of him,
It's harder to find a good, solid catcher.
Okay, if it was me, I would go sign a shortstop, really, really elite defensive shortstop. I would move Chris Bryant to the outfield. I would put Javi Baez at third because as he gets bigger and stronger, a lot of people in the game feel the next 4 or 5 years he's an elite shortstop. Eventually, as he gets older and slows down a little bit, he's perfect at third because he has so much power in his bat. You're telling me if I have a Gold Glove caliber shortstop that I go get, and I have Javi Baez on the left, I got the best left side defensively in the game, and I put Chris Bryant's bat in the outfield, that's a really good team.
Who's this Gold Glove shortstop you're getting?
Okay, what if I make a deal that I'm able to trade Wilson Contreras, and I'm able to bring prospects back? You're going to get a haul back for him. He's got 3 years, and I trade those prospects for a guy who's on the trading block like Francisco Lindor. But they don't have the money to do these things. That's the problem.
So you just got my hopes up, and it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Way to go, Cappy.
Not going to happen, kid. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Mickey in Bucktown. Mickey, is it Mickey or Mikey?
It's Mickey, Cap. Good to talk to you again.
What's up, kid?
I'd hate to see Contreras go over Bryant because, and there's no way I think Bryant is worth $45 million for 2 years. I think the league caught up to him, and I think next year he'd be lucky if he hits 240. I just have no faith in Bryant at all.
Wait a minute. Bryant just had a very, very solid year, albeit he didn't drive in the number of runs we want because he didn't have a lot of guys on base in front of him. He had a high OBP. He had a north of 900 OPS. He hit north of 30 home runs. He's amazing in the room. So to arbitrarily pick out that he's a 240 hitter, I do not agree with you at all.
Yeah, wait, have you watched last
year? Hold on, $45 million for 2 years for a top 20 player in the game, top 25 player in the game? That is a bargain in today's economy, a bargain in baseball.
I would try to get rid of him. I would try to get something for him. When I watched him all last year, he hit when nobody was on. But when it counted, he never came through, never.
Yeah, I think that is actually, and I'll bring those numbers up. Then appreciate your call. I believe is a bit of a fallacy. If you bring up the numbers on Chris Bryant last year, Chris's stats are way better than people want to give him credit for. I'm just telling you. Chris Bryant is a better I got to think you could get something back. I understand the people that have concerns. I get it. But if you look at Chris Bryant's numbers, Chris Bryant last year had an OPS north of 900, 903. He had an on-base percentage north of 380, 382. He had a slug of 521. He hit 282. He had 31 home runs. Is he the best player in the game? No, he's not Mike Trout. He's not. but he's a damn good baseball player. He is. And you look at his numbers, played 147 games. That's a lot of games to play. He played 151, 155, 151. He got hurt in 2018, played only 102. He played another 147 last year. So the guy stays, you know, pretty healthy. He's a really good baseball player. I'm just telling you. I would move him to the outfield. That's what I would do. All right, we got to take a quick timeout. Don't forget, top of the hour, we'll talk football with Dan Orlovsky and preview Bears and Packers. Rick Hahn is here at 11:25, and Jim Bowden is here at, I believe, 11 o'clock. It's that time of year again. You know, when every ad you see is claiming out for the best winter furnace tune-up maintenance. You need someone you can trust for your heating, AC, and plumbing needs, and now you've got a guy. Call our guys at Four Seasons Heating, AC, and Plumbing today. No baloney service contracts, no unnecessary repair fees, just trusted, top-notch, qualified technicians who'll give you an honest maintenance service or evaluation of your HVAC system or plumbing needs. Call or visit online today at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. Just make a note, tomorrow morning, believe it's going to be right around 7:05 here, 9:05 at home. Jim Thome is going to be on set with us. Jed Hoyer scheduled to be on the show tomorrow. And Jeff Passan scheduled to be on the show tomorrow.
We might have a baseball roundtable today. Jeff Passan just texted me and asked if he could stop by during the 8 o'clock hour. So Jesse's going to be, well, 10 o'clock hour at home. I got to remember to do that. Yeah. So Jesse's going to be here at 10:25. Jeff Passan might come with him. So we'll have a little baseball roundtable with you, Passan, and Jesse at 10:25.
Looking forward to it.
Can't miss.
Can't miss radio. All right, that's all coming up next. Take a quick time out. We'll be right back to ESPN 1000.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer.
Carmen and Yurko.
It's Packer Week. We're talking Bears and Packers with Kyle Brandt at 12:30.
Big plus for the defense. Hicks going to be back, and hopefully Amukamara too.
Plus Jesse Rogers from San Diego. See you at noon for Crosstalk on ESPN 1000.
Hey, welcome back. ESPN 1000, lobby of the Grand Hyatt in San Diego, California. Day two of the Major League Baseball winter meetings. Nothing so far for the two Chicago teams. We did have the Steven Strasburg deal go down yesterday. There was a lot of thought Garrett Cole could come off the board as quickly as today. And now the expectations are that his contract will exceed $300 million. Dollars for a pitcher. You look back when John Lester got 155, people were like, wow, that's a ton of money for a pitcher. And there's talk he's going to go more than double that. The Yu Darvish deal at 126, obviously now looks like a bargain if he pitches like he did in the second half of the season. We also had basketball in town last night. The Bulls and the world champion Toronto Raptors play. Now the Bulls lose a tough one in Miami in overtime. They get on the plane, they come home, and give those players credit, man. They're playing hard. And Jim Boylan was asked, is the fan base, we had attendance. Chris, am I wrong? I saw the picture.
What up,
Cap? The attendance announced was 14,500. It looked like there wasn't even half that there.
Cap, set the scene around you right now in the hallway at the Hyatt. Is it kind of empty? A bit empty
me,
right now.
Danny,
few people milling about.
San Diego radio station.
Yeah, so,
there's an MLB station.
Right, one,
and
two.
There's another guy walking through.
Yeah, I bet you there's more people in your lobby than were in the 300 section last night at the United Center.
Wow. That is not good. That is embarrassing. So, Jim Boylan was asked, is the fan base becoming numb to your basketball team?
I don't know. I can't speak for everybody or the fans. I get a lot of positive feedback about our group. I think people understand what we're trying to build. It's disappointing when we don't win games. It's disappointing when we don't win home games. Nobody's running from that. This team is playing hard, and they're competing, and they're learning, and they're growing. So I think people can see that, too. And I love the way our defense has grown since the opening five games. And I thought we had a lot of really good looks tonight that we can make. I felt that way. First half, I thought we had open looks that we can make. And the ball was popping. Ball was moving. Those are the things I look at. Are they good shots? Are they open shots? Is the ball moving? How many times this year have we had 30 assists? I'm not sure. Do you guys know? I'm not sure. So we talk about getting 35. That's kind of our goal, is to get 35. We got 30. So I'm not going to let those things deter me from understanding who we are and what we're trying to do and what we're building. I'm not. I can't control those things. I'm not doing it.
So he was then asked about the game coming down to the final shot. Ball's in the hands of Zach LaVine. Here is Jim Boylan on LaVine.
Trying to get fouled, trying to get something good going to the rim. It's a shot he can make. You know, we trust him with the ball in his hands. He's delivered before, and we'll trust him again. So these games, people focus on the last play. I don't think you can do that. I can't do that. I have to focus on the game and where maybe we could have played better and built the lead to 10 or 12 or 14, and now it's a different game at the end. So we learn in those last moments, but we got to learn throughout the game too.
Boylan also talked about his starters coming in late, but again, the Bulls blow a late lead.
My subs were tired. You know, we're on a back-to-back. My subs were tired. And, you know, there's always a discussion on who we should leave in and who we should take out. And when guys are fatigued, they made their run. And the starter's job is to come back in, get re-engaged in the game, and close it out. That's what they did. They brought their guys in and they closed the game out. We have to learn to do that. That's the growth plate. That's what we're close. We're right there. That's the next step.
Okay. They had an opportunity for Zach LaVine to dish the ball to Daniel Gafford and win the basketball game by one. Stacey King on NBC Sports Chicago. Well, here's his take on what happened on the final play.
He's going to come up. Now, freeze it right now. Freeze it right now. That ball now has got to be there. Ball's got to be there. That's a game-winning dunk right there. Go ahead and roll it. Zach tries to score. He goes in. Tough shot. And had he gave it to the rookie Gafford, the Bulls win that game easily.
Exactly right. He is exactly 100% right. You've got to play with a more unselfish mentality, not a hero mentality that you were the guy that made the shot. You got to make the winning basketball play. Zach LaVine did not. Thus, the Bulls lose another tough ball game.
Cap, don't forget, Zach LaVine told everyone in the offseason he's going to be an all-star, and he wants to be one of the best players in the league. And don't talk about his defense. But yet,
correct,
nothing matches with what he says. He cannot play to the caliber of the way he talks.
Right. And Chris, you were watching the game. I was streaming it on the My Teams app.
It's a good app.
I'm just telling you, man, it's a great app. You have to make the winning basketball play. What would Michael Jordan do there? He would make the winning play. Now, he's obviously a better player, of course. He's the greatest of all time. But think about Michael kicking the ball out to Pax or finding Horace or Dennis or whoever it was. Michael Jordan made the winning play. That's how you win basketball games, and that's what other great players do. They make the winning play, not the hero play. There's times that you need that. There's times that you don't. And this team is, boy, in a really bad spot, and the fan base has turned. That's a real problem. 312-332-3776, Bears-Packers week, and we will talk football with Dan Orlovsky. We'll tackle Bears-Packers next.